First guy in our friend group to win, and we were traveling together and everything was lovely, and that obviously drove all of us to be like, wow, this is doable. Possibly. Now we can, yeah,
everybody
do this.
Can agree, yeah, on that. They're just an all-round incredible personality on the Sunshine Tour. This morning, exciting for us, very personal to us. We've known Carl Barker for quite some time on the show. He's always, there's been a few times he's been a bit behind the scenes. We also did a wonderful shootout for Longest Drive with Corbin Bosch and Carl, which the footage perhaps will B-roll now as we speak. But we've got Carl Barker here, Sunshine Tour player, currently sitting fourth on the Order of Merit, now sponsored by the Courier guys. We've also, he's the current Players Championship, which was hosted at Dainfin, and the sponsor being Stella Artois.
Yeah.
So Stella, we've got your beers here. It's also nice and chilled and cold. And he came from the 22nd Order of Merit last year, and with incredible sponsorships, but I would say everybody can agree on that. They're just an all-round incredible personality on the Sunshine Tour.
Thank you, Albert. Thank
Welcome,
you, Arthur.
Welcome, Carl, and thank you for joining us and taking the time to do so.
This is fantastic. I've been excited for this for a long time now, and let's get into the chat.
And my partner, Arthur, welcome to you this
Thank
morning.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm feeling fresh this morning.
That
shave. The
shave is fresh.
Haircut, everything.
Got some sleep last night. I'm only on like 2 sips of the Rockstar this morning, so I'm feeling good to go now.
Okay. Listen, it's because Carl is one of the better looking guys on the tour that you prepared for him this morning?
No, my wife's away, so I'm actually getting some sleep.
Well, firstly, Arthur, wife away getting a haircut's not really corresponding with sleep. It's more like I'm going to get some time with my
dogs.
My dogs also are away, so I'm home alone.
Also gone. Yeah. Where's the family?
They actually gone to visit other family because I'm doing some renovations at the house. So
okay.
I've chased them away.
Nice. What are you building, a putting green?
I wish.
That'll be
doing some waterproofing at the moment. Good time to do it in winter.
Yeah.
I like it, boy.
Yeah. So I've had some two nights of good sleep, so I'm feeling good. But it is a bit strange going home to an empty house and that you just hear the crickets in the background and don't know what to do with yourself.
No babies crying.
No babies crying, no dogs to say hello to, baby to say hello to. But a couple more days and they're back and back to reality, to no sleep.
Listen, Arthur, before we get into Carl, yeah.
Yes, it feels like it's my interview, too. Let's
go. Wow, this is the Arthur show, boy.
It's been quite a few exciting weeks for us on the show, eh?
It has been very, very cool, eh? And I think there's also not just the last couple of episodes. I'm very excited for the episodes to release, but also what's coming as well.
Yeah, but it's just incredible. I mean, we all of a sudden have big brands that want to engage with us, you know. And also, we are crossing the bridge from your traditional just players to sports people within that also plays golf.
Oh, it's great. I mean, I've been watching your guys' show now for a while, and the people you've got on are so influential and just great people.
Mm.
And I've learned a lot actually watching your guys' podcast. So,
You really humbled me. Humbled by what you said to me the other day. So you listen to the show and you've actually learned things from what we say. And you say you also, you listen to the voice part of it in the car.
Yeah, I'll play the videos on YouTube and then I just listen to it while I'm driving. It's brilliant.
Ach, I'm so glad.
Do you also agree with me that Albert talks too much and he doesn't let me talk enough?
No, sometimes, but not all the time.
I have been, I don't think we can be more critical on ourselves than other people are.
No, 100%.
But I'm certainly aware of it. And just like Mornay, told me to do better intros, because I always just assume everybody knows who we're speaking to.
100%.
But we're getting better, and that's for everybody that's watching. You know, it's still a passion project of ours, and I think we're getting better. And hopefully
that was
a
great intro.
Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate that.
But listen, Carl's also the nicest guy on tour.
Yeah.
As an individual, as a human being. So he's also going to tell you some nice things about yourself today that you don't get often.
Yeah, that hat is looking beautiful.
Thank you.
I mean, black and red, tiger-esque. ready for, look like you're ready to make loads of birdies today.
Well, when I see your beautiful Titleist bag, which you've got a really nice bag.
Yes, thank you,
Titleist. I have to represent your partners, so hence we've got the caps on today.
No, thank you. That means a lot.
So, Kyle, so someone take us a little bit from where this all started and how you ended up with golf.
Okay, so, yeah, I grew up, my dad and I used to watch golf every Saturday and Sunday. I used to lie on the couch with him and watch golf. And then used to, you know, on the weekends we'd go play golf. And that was fun until about the age of 12. My main sport was actually cricket.
Okay.
And
you look like a spinner.
Yeah.
No, not a spinner, boy.
Not.
What was your strength there?
I was actually all-rounder, but fielding was like my main. I used to play point position, so I used to dive catches and everything. It was great fun, but only up until the age of 12. And then I went for the Gauteng team trials and didn't make it, and then was wondering why I didn't make it, and my dad told me other reasons why. And yeah, I threw my cricket bag in the back of the car, and I said, that's that, I'm done with that. And driving on the way home, my dad said, so what are you going to do now? Well, I mean, we know you want to play sport. I said, Dad, I want to play golf. Individual sport, and I feel like, you know, I can really do that. Then a few months later, I was sent to a golf school down in George, the Kanaka Golf Academy. Roger Vessels was my coach there. He was very good. I was there for 1.5 years, then came back, started homeschooling, hooked up with my coach that I'm still with now today, Neil Cheatham. So I've been with him now for 10 years. And yeah, the journey has just been crazy since then.
But Carl, so what on that day, what did your dad say to you? What went wrong when you did the provincial?
No, I scored 36 runs and took 3 wickets and wasn't chosen for the side. And I was a bit confused, you know, and I don't know why, but yeah, I was over it after that. Then, yeah, I went to my second love, which was golf. The time, my second love. Now, obviously, it's my life.
Yeah.
Who's your first love?
Savannah. Her name's Savannah. She's my fiance, about to get married on the 20th of December. But, John, that's what happened that day. And then since that day, I've chosen golf, and that's that. Yeah.
But you also see in team sports, like, you can be an out, like, you can stand out. And if your team's not performing, it does hinder the selection process. And there's 100%. Also a lot of politics when it comes to team selection and provincial selections. I mean, not trying to be nasty, but, you know, this player's dad is friends with the coach or the selector. And there's biasness to it. And I was also very similar. I think at the age of like 13, 14, I just focused on individual sports, so tennis and golf.
Yeah.
So I wanted to put the ball in my court and be in control of things, like, which I think is a great decision. Team sports are brutal sport, eh?
Yeah, it's brutal. Because
you got to rely on the whole team to perform, and if someone else doesn't do what they need to do, like in football,
it hinders
you. The defender and goalkeeper can have a nightmare. You know, the team's not going to win.
Yeah.
You know, and you could be really good on paper, but team sports is quite brutal.
Yeah, that's a fair sport. That's a fair comment, because in golf, whether you're the most liked person, you know, or whether you have the greatest personality, your golf will dictate.
Yeah, your score will dictate.
Will dictate what happens around it, 100%. What sponsorships gets involved, what access you get to other tours and etc. and exemptions and etc. I mean, that's a very fair point that from a team sport to individual sport, you sort of just control that. And obviously, there's a big support team around that. But I hear what you're saying there. And it's probably why it's not the first time we hear a team sport becoming, I'm focusing more as an individual on it.
Yeah.
But what has changed in the last 10 months? Because all of a sudden, you're accelerating. At an extremely fast pace.
Was it because you came for a fitting with me at True Fit and you got all the information?
Definitely that. Definitely, Arthur.
I'm teasing.
No.
But because you turned pro, sorry, in 2016.
Yes. October of 2016.
So it's certainly not overnight success.
Definitely not. Jeez, I've climbed every single step of the ladder that you could possibly think of. I mean, I didn't play much amateur golf. I played a lot of junior golf and then made all the sides for IPT for Central Gauteng, which was amazing. For me, that was a good achievement at the time. And yeah, then I decided to turn professional at the age of 18. And the, you know, the Golf RSA and SA Golf didn't really agree with what I was, my decision, but they said I could go ahead with it at the time. And then just played IGT and Big Easy Golf for 3 years. And
just
I found,
to get that experience.
Jeez, I mean, I was playing almost week in and week out every week, and it was such a good breeding ground for where I am now, you know. And I feel like if I didn't have that foundation of professional golf, you know, I need to make this putt so I can play next week, and, you know, those sort of pressures, yeah, I don't think I would be where I am today.
So in your opinion, so in 2016... You were only 18 years old.
I was 18 years old.
Yeah, because you're 25 at the moment, there.
Yeah, 25.
Holy moly, we always forget how young you still are.
Yeah.
And what was the reservations to turn pro? I mean, I understand from an industry body perspective. And it's, forgive me just to divert you, but Ulrich Potgieter just announced this morning he's turning professional.
Oh, that's brilliant.
You know,
what
Ulrich
a player. Potgieter,
he got the exemption on the tour. And this morning he announced, you know, which I'm assuming wasn't part of his plans.
Yeah.
But what would be the hesitation? What was the hesitation in that time?
So I played, like I said, all the IPTs and then tried to work my way up the amateur ranks in South Africa. But I just felt like I was getting nowhere. And I was just hovering like 25 on the order of merit to like 30 on the order of merit in the amateur ranks. And I found the more I played, the more it was actually... with the whole ranking system, how it worked, I didn't really understand. I just played more and more and played as much as I could. Whereas actually, sometimes you actually shouldn't play this tournament because last year you finished sixth. And now if you play it this year and you finish worse than sixth...
you lose your points.
You lose points. And I was like, how does that work? So I was like, no, stuff this. I want to... You know, the amount of money that I make is where I want to be sitting on the order of merit. So the more you play, the more money you earn, you're going to be on top.
Yeah.
So the world golf rankings is very similar to that.
Yeah.
If you, let's finish top five in the British Open, and then next year you miss your cut, boom, you're going to drop big ranking points because it's also very similar.
Yeah, they use divisors and
yeah,
all
yeah,
sorts
yeah.
of stuff. So I just wanted, you know, local order of merits, the amount of money you earn is where you should be on the order of merit.
Mm. And the order of merit, just from a professional player's perspective, how does that work?
So the more, obviously, the more cuts you make, the more money you earn, and then you climb the ranks. Well, now they've changed to a point system,
okay,
which I think actually is going to help us a lot because it was quite top heavy with all the co-sanctions, you know.
Okay.
A guy would win a co-sanction, only play one or two events, and now all of a sudden he's on the top of the order of merit, whereas, you know, some
a guy could win five events during the season on the Sunshine event and not really climb so much.
Yeah, he could win like five Vodacom Origins events and then only make 500-600 points or 700 points, and then over 700,000 rand. And then a guy would come and win $4 million, and now he's like way ahead of you in one from one tournament.
So the point system, just give me an idea how that works.
So I think they've just created a point system to make it less top heavy with the co-sanctions.
Okay.
And I think you win, so like when I won the Stella Artois, I got X amount of money, but the points were more than the money.
Okay.
To try and balance it out.
Okay.
So I think that's what they've done.
In a nutshell, previous seasons, the order of merit was just money. The only indicator was money.
Okay.
So if you made an X amount of money, you would climb. Now they've made it a lot more simpler where no matter if you go to Sishen and play a Vodacom Origins event or you play the Joburg Open, yes, obviously Joburg Open will have more points.
More points.
But you can actually, based on a good season, you can have a good season in winter and a poor summer, then at least you still climb the ladder. In winter.
Yeah, you won't fall off as heavy.
You won't fall off as heavy because in the past it was all about summer. If you're not playing the summer events, you're moving backwards because everyone's just running past you the whole time.
Yeah.
So I think it's fair. It's definitely a fair structure, to be honest.
100%. But it's obviously a moving target, and clearly by some changes in the last year, it's amazing. But, you know, no judgment on it, that we're all still learning.
Mm.
Because the tour obviously is learning as they still go along.
Yeah.
And also in the last 3 years, I mean, call it 2 years especially, there's been a lot of change in golf.
Jeez, no, the Sunshine Tour especially. Thomas and his team have done is unbelievable for us players.
You know, like I said to you earlier, I had one of the tour marketing managers here this week, in fact, yesterday. And we were just going through some of the changes that Thomas has brought in, and it's just been amazing.
Mm.
But there's also politics, like in anything, you know, there's politics involved. But is there any indication as to how the PGA Live Tour a merger is going to affect the Sunshine Tour?
So we don't know yet
exactly
what the changes are going to be.
Because I'm assuming, the co-sanctioned tours will be possibly affected?
No, I don't. Well, listen, this is my opinion and I haven't done enough research, but the mergers between the USPGA and LIV. So I would say Sunshine Tour's merger tour is the European and Challenge Tour.
Okay.
So I don't know. I can't see how it's going to affect the Sunshine Tour personally.
Okay.
I could be totally wrong, and I don't think there's enough information out there currently because it's still new information.
Yeah.
But I can't see it affecting the European Tour and Sunshine Tour on the merge.
Okay.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. And just going back, one step back to the new point system, I think it's also quite nice for the pros. Like, if you go into the Order of Merit, it's all points-based. Previously, it was all money-based. So now, every week, I can watch Kyle and see, this oak's balling. He's just made R1 million in the last 2 weeks. You know, so people are nosy when it comes to things. So that protection of, yes, you could, if you do enough research, you could find out how much they're winning anyway.
Yes.
But I think that's also really, really nice because it's all based on points. It's not about how much money they've earned, and they've almost protected that person on seeing how much money they're earning.
Yeah.
100%. Because people are all money driven. I mean, you know.
I didn't think about it that way, actually. It's a good point.
Yeah, 100%. So you go look in the past when Dani van Tonde was just going crazy and then all of a sudden he's R4 million richer. I literally click 4 buttons and I can see how much it is. Now, it's not the case, which I think that protection is, I don't know if that's the right word, but that protection is quite nice.
Yeah.
Because it's not like you can go click 4 buttons and see what my salary is.
But does it, forgive me,
what I mean?
Does it stop, it also then takes players so they don't select too much, selective playing.
Yeah.
Because then they just go for the big, you know, the big wins and the big co-sanctioned. They also are incentivized to play on a lot of the tours.
Yeah, 100%. So like, for example, we can use first person that comes into mind, like a Jacques Kruijswijk, for example, who plays on the European Tour. Now, if he has a 4-week break, not traveling to Europe, he might want to play one or two smaller events on the Sunshine Tour because it's on point system.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To build his ranking on the Sunshine Tour. If it was all just money based and it's smaller events, he's not even going to move much anyway. Playing those events, he might as well just practice and have his off time.
So that's
So I think it's definitely incentivizing, I would say, guys that are playing abroad to come back and play a little bit more as well.
100%. We've seen that. We've definitely seen that. More players are coming back playing the smaller events, and it's nice to have them because for our world ranking points as well,
100%.
It increases, you know, the field strength and all of that.
Because the point system is connected to the other tours as well.
So let me interrupt you. So basically, if who's a good example? So if Dean Burmeister is ranked 60 in the world and he comes and plays the Kit Kat Pro-Am and he's 60 in the world, all of a sudden the world ranking points for that event is way bigger than if he didn't play.
Yeah.
Okay? Like so for example, when Eric was top 50 on the Order of Merit and he played
SA Open
or the Nedbank, everyone is happy that he's playing. Not because they want to see him and say, well, hello, what's the lacquer. It's because it benefits their world ranking points. Okay.
Yeah, you make the cut or you finish top 10.
Yeah.
You get more world ranking points and you climb, you know, obviously the world order of merit.
And is the pointing system quite an easy thing to understand?
No, I still don't understand it. From my understanding is, obviously there's point structure on how strong the field is. That's why all the majors are strong, because it's got the top 70 players in the world and. But you gain your points based on strength of field, and size of points is on strength on field, and obviously based on performance, you get more ranking points based on that. And then, obviously, if you play that same event next year, in order to gain points from the previous season, to actually have that positive deficit, then you would have to improve last year's performance. If you are worse than the performance, you lose last year's ranking points. It comes off.
Okay.
So in English, to explain it, on H&A, you have your 20 rounds.
Yeah.
I don't know how it works on what the number is, but let's say it's 8 or 9 or 10. And let's say 9 was your 68 and you're a 2 handicap. Now, the minute you get to 10 and that 68, 10 rounds played, and that 68 falls out, all of a sudden you might go from a 2 to a 3 or a 4 because that good score has been removed.
Okay. It's
very similar to that structure in terms of world ranking points.
I mean, just put it into this perspective. This is crazy. I mean, won the Stella Artois Players Championship. I got 2.7 points for winning, okay? Wyndham Clark, they just won the US Open, got 100 points. So that means I'd have to win like 33
Stella Artois
to get 100 points. I mean, that's mind-blowing.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think anyone will do that. So, yeah, obviously, and we had a pretty strong field. We had like 5 or 6 players within the top 300 in the world, which is not bad in the Stella Artois.
Yeah, Tristan Lawrence played.
Jaco Alles, a few other guys, yeah. Mm.
It was a decent
field. Dylan Mostert, Casey Jarvis.
All your mates.
All my mates.
Casey's also something.
Yeah, Casey's special, eh?
Special, I mean.
So how's this? We travelled together the whole of last season, and I didn't beat him in one tournament. And the only tournament I beat him was the Stella Artois, and he finished second. So the only way I can theoretically beat him is to win the golf tournament.
That is funny.
Yeah, I saw that one. He was the runner-up, eh?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think this is a good time to discuss. I don't know what that time period is, but obviously Dylan winning.
Yeah.
Was obviously, you could see on TV how special it was for you guys.
Yeah.
Casey's been knocking on the door a couple of times, and you guys have been there, and then you. So,
and Herman Lopcher as well.
Herman Lopcher as well.
He was the first one to win, so he got his card back at qualifying school at, what's that course they play there?
Somewhere Heron there Banks. By the Vol, Heron Banks.
Yeah, tough course apparently. So Herman got his card 2 weeks before the first event last season. The first event was at Arabella. Herman wins. First guy in our friend group to win, and we were traveling together and everything was lovely. And that obviously drove all of us to be like, wow, this is, you know, it's doable. Possible. Now. We can definitely do this.
Yeah.
And then Dill was the next one to win a few weeks later at the Kit Kat. And then obviously he won again at the Nelson Mandela, the Challenge Tour event at Humewood. And yeah, obviously then I felt like I had to do it. You know, it can't be falling.
Can't be
behind.
The fourth leg,
So Casey must feel left out at the moment. But
no,
listen,
he does.
All respect to Casey. He's having a very, very good season.
Oh, he's
very
doing, good he's season. One of the best players I've played with. And
why is that?
Quite
do you think it's because he's so aggressive when he goes for his iron shots towards the green? He's got almost like zero.
He doesn't have fear. He plays with no fear. Just probably the most confident player I've ever played with. I mean, I played the first two rounds with him at the Limpopo Championships beginning of this year. And we're on the 9th hole of our second day. It was a long par 5. It was actually the 18th hole, but our 9th hole. And it's long. You can't reach it in 2. But he goes, driver, 3 wood. He's still got like 70 meters to the flag. Hits it to like 5 foot from the hole, straight up the hill, 5 foot. Walks up there and he's like, guys, I want to tap this in. I want to just tap it in quick from 5 foot. Okay, so his caddy takes out the flag. He doesn't mark it, clean the ball, nothing. There's still mud on the ball, and just taps it in. goes in for birdie. I mean, that's how crazy that Oak is.
He's a bit of
he's just got no fear, and when he feels like he wants to do something on the course, he'll just do it, and most of the time it pays off.
And I think that goes
he's brilliant.
I think that goes to certain personality, especially for Casey, and you could answer this really, really well. If he had to sit for 2.5-3 minutes, wait for the other guys to play out, he's probably he knows he's going to miss the putt because he's probably going to think about it for so long, and then he's going to overread it and am I going to make it or not. Right now his thinking is, okay, let me just tap it in, get my birdie, let's just get it done.
Yeah, Casey's definitely not an overthinker. If anything, he doesn't think at all.
Okay,
he just looks and hits. No, he's brilliant,
which is a
look
good,
up to him for that,
which is a good positive.
Yeah, I've definitely taken some aspects out of his game and created in my own way to play with less fear. And yeah, he's helped me a lot.
Yeah,
I look
great
up to him, even though he's 19 years old. And I'm 25, you know, I respect the way he plays. It's brilliant. But also a funny story. So after I won the Players' Championship, obviously we were celebrating in the clubhouse afterwards, and myself, Dylan Morstead, Herman Lopesha, and Casey Jarvis, we took a picture like this. And while we were posing for the picture, Herman tunes 3 winners and a
That is funny.
Oh, it was brilliant.
He's still going to win a lot, eh?
Casey's definitely.
He's going to win a lot.
He's going to win something big.
Yeah. He's definitely prone, and the way that everybody's writing about him, he's going to be...
He knocked on the door at Houghton, eh?
Yeah. Yes, he's knocked on the door.
That was the Joburg Open. He was knocking on the door, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other guys just played ridiculously well.
Yeah.
You're talking about the last one.
The recent Joburg Open.
Yeah.
They just literally didn't make mistakes, and they just fired. I mean, Casey had a good opportunity there, but the other guys just played really good at the end of the day on the last day.
Yeah, that was impressive.
Yeah.
So just take me through the last 10 months. What has changed? Is there something you can pinpoint to?
Definitely. A lot has changed in my life in the last 2 years. So after COVID and that, I was really struggling with my game and was missing cuts and just wasn't happy. And then my family moved from Midrand back to our old house in Roodepoort area. And then, yeah, my parents decided to separate. And that was like a changing point for me. I decided to move out of the house, moved in with Savannah. So now we've been living together for the last 2 years. But she's really helped me a lot to get to where I am now today. Then a couple months after that, we played the SA Open. A couple months after my parents separated, I moved out. Went to go play the SA Open at Sun City. It was that time when COVID was still crazy. Not a lot of the European tour guys played. And Savannah introduced me to Gavin Groves. She knew him from a while back and whatever. But she introduced me to him, and sure, he's helped me a lot with the whole training and just getting in the gym and getting fitter and golf fit, you know, and getting my body prepared for tournaments. That's been a big change point. And then, yeah, I've implemented a lot of other things on the golf course and off the course, course management strategies. I'm using Decade, which is a great course management strategy that I can honestly say that I haven't hit a shot in the last year and a bit without using that strategy, even in fun rounds.
And what is that a program or what?
Yeah, it's a program. So use it for stats.
Is it a strokes gain program?
Yeah, you can base it against strokes gain, PGA Tour, different tours. But it's mostly a course management strategy.
Okay.
So you hit a lot of balls on the range and you find out your dispersions, and then you compute it into the system, and then it comes up. You can search any golf course on the app and it'll come up Google Earth images, and then it comes up with your lines, your distances and your dispersions, and you can drag your lines off the tee to see which is the best line. So if you push it or pull it, you're not getting into trouble.
That is so impressive.
That is so cool. What is this called, the software?
It's called Decade Golf.
Is it an international app?
How do you spell that?
Yeah, it's an American
Decade.
Oh,
Decade.
Okay,
so they call it Decade because not only is it an acronym for a few things, it's a whole system. But it's also they claim that it'll shave decades off of your golf experience because it's teaching you how to play golf correctly,
okay,
mathematically correct. It's really interesting. But where it's helped me most is with approach shots.
Do you know anyone, let's call it, in the top 100 that use it? Do they market it like
Bryson
that?
Bryson DeChambeau, Colin Morikawa, okay. Will Zalatoris. So Will Zalatoris was actually like
the younger generation.
Yeah, the younger generation. Robert McIntyre.
Go try get Ernie Els.
Yeah.
I think Robert McIntyre, you know, the lefty.
Yes.
Great European Tour player. He won a tournament like last year sometime. And the week before he won, he started using this decade strategy, and he said, literally, he wouldn't have won if he didn't use a strategy.
That is so impressive.
And that strategy is in preparation for the course, Nate.
Yes. So basically, all the work gets put in your practice rounds.
Yeah.
You get your lines off the tees, excuse me, and you get your numbers around the greens and everything for your approach shot targets, and then you just free flow in the tournament. So all the hard work is put in, obviously.
So you're using the app in the practice round?
Yeah, I'm using the app in the practice round to get my lines off the tees. And then also around the greens and that. It gets a bit complicated around the greens.
Does it incorporate trees?
Yeah, it incorporates trees, hazards, bunkers, all of that.
Just like, that's really incredible. And you know what I loved about what you just said there is that you actually understand what was changed in the last 2 years in order to get to this point.
Yes. And there's obviously another thing. So there's probably three things that I've changed. Is the work that I've been putting off the course with my coach, Neil Cheatham.
Yeah.
We've implemented a lot of systems now, maintenance drills that I do after every single round, after every practice session. Where I've got basically two different swings. I've got a core swing during tournament, and then I've got a maintenance swing, which basically just clears out all the problems that creep in.
Just hoist Q20 on the rust a little bit.
Exactly. Yeah.
Give us an idea on the two different swings. What's different?
So it's basically setup stuff. So on the course, my natural grip and everything is very strong.
Okay.
I get quite a bit of forward lean with the shaft. My weight tends to get a bit on the left side during the swing. So the maintenance swing after every round is just basically getting into a perfect neutral position.
So he's not moving. So if he's strong, he's not moving too stronger. He's almost just making sure that he's not going stronger in the grip. I'm just using the grip as an example.
Yes.
So he's not moving too, because he's already strong.
Yeah.
If he goes any stronger, there's problems.
Correct. So we're trying to work within perimeters of trying to stay consistent and find a way that over time, the maintenance stuff will slowly creep into the golf course stuff. And then that's what I've changed as well. So we've got a swing maintenance, then we've got a short game maintenance, and a putting now today. I went to go this morning, work with Neil on some putting maintenance drills and try quantify ways to get better with the putting as well. So that I wouldn't say it's not fluke why I've been playing well, but I've definitely changed things and seen the fruits of the hard labor.
But you had to go through what you go through in order to realize what needs to change next.
100%.
You know, it's not just an overnight decision. It comes with experience, and failures give you that experience.
100%.
So do you guys as a team sat down and said, listen, we need to change things up because of your low that you came down from? Or is it more management driven, management being your coaches, like a Gavin Groves? Who decides this?
So I think I decide, you know, seeing as I'm the boss of my career and that.
Yeah.
Also, obviously, moving out and starting to live, independently now, not depending on my parents anymore, I've grown up a lot in the last 2 years.
Okay.
You know, learning how to do washing, dishes, cook, open curtains, close curtains.
Make the bed.
Make the bed. Do the cat litter. Make sure they have food and water. I mean, that stuff's hard,
That stuff's big, buddy.
That stuff we just take for granted when we're living with our parents and living with,
Yeah.
So that's just little things like that. I've grown up a lot. Without Savannah, I wouldn't have been able to do that, you know. So,
and then you've missed one thing that I'm curious about. So you've mentioned, you know, the structures you've implemented and stuff with physical and technique. What are you doing mentally?
Mentally, I've just started working with Theo Bacedonote.
Okay.
A couple months ago. It was actually our first session was the week before the Stella Artois, funny enough, Players Championship. So, I mean, Theo says it normally takes a few months for his clients to start winning, but he said it was just an anomaly that it took me 1 week after our first session with him.
But do you think he's taught you things that he knew, or that you knew, or, surely you had a decent baseline.
I had a decent baseline with routines and processes on the course, but they weren't as,
structured.
As structured, as precise as, you know, Theo has taught me now. I mean, we're going so in depth that there's a system for my caddy now. He needs to know where to put the golf bag while I'm hitting a shot. It needs to be 3 meters behind the ball and 2 meters to the right, you know, so that I can stand behind the ball with my bag, visualize the shot, get the club, so that everything is so precise.
You're not influencing your routine.
Yes.
Or taking longer to decide on getting the club.
Correct.
If your bag's further away, yeah, you're taking more time.
And everything's the same.
Yeah.
I mean, think about how many times you stand over the ball and you feel like, oh, this might not be the right club.
Yeah.
But your caddy is like 5 meters away. Now you have to walk to him, get the club out, go back, and
then
now start again.
Your routine's messed.
Yeah. Now your routine's messed. You might be overthinking. So there's a precise place even where the caddy needs to put the bag so that he's in the right position in case, you know, there's indecision. Or
it's almost like, stupid example, like I played Kyle Army yesterday.
A little bit of a warm-up round before tomorrow.
Yeah.
Oh, lekker. Yeah. So basically a decade course management.
You want to know something interesting? I shot level par first round in 2 months, and I didn't hit a fairway on the front nine.
Jeez, like, are you using the leather wedge or what?
No, bro. I pulled myself a Ricky Fowler replica putter, like a long putter with a long grip.
Oh, is it? One of those?
Counterbalance.
Counterbalance,
dude. Yeah.
Try beat me a 10 foot or closer, no chance. Okay, but it's not about me. But you know how many times I drive the cart, like let's say next to the green, and then I've got a bunker shot, so I get a lob wedge, and then I get in there and there's no sand. Now I need to walk all the way to the car to get something with, more bounce. And that's just such a loss.
Yeah.
And you're almost like irritated now yourself. I've got to walk an extra 20 meters.
Or you feel too lazy and you play the shot with your 60 degree and you gum it or whatever.
Yeah. I think amateurs just go,
I think that's an amateur move. Luckily, I've got a little bit of experience with that. Yeah. So I'll rather, that competitive edge in me is still there. So like, I don't want to go to bunker shot, for example.
Who did you play with?
Rob Westray and Bryden.
Nice. Yeah, pro shop.
It's Ian Everly from Mizuno's farewell. He's moving to Dubai.
Lekker.
So that's just, I got so distracted there all of a sudden. Yeah. But it does work. You have to have the right club and the bag right next to you.
Yeah.
So.
Listen, I mean, course management is, I would say amateurs need to take that far more seriously, because when it comes to amateurs, course management really, really starts to play a massive role in your strokes.
And I honestly,
there's just no doubt about
that. I honestly think...
For professionals, I would assume it's fine-tuning.
Yeah.
You know, where with an amateur can literally change that bogey into a possible birdie putt.
100%.
If he just changes the basics and take the ego, out of it.
If I've got any advice for amateur golfers is to not go for flags.
Yeah.
Unless the flag is in the middle of the green.
Yeah.
Always go towards the fat side of the green, because now you're changing your dispersion to, on the green. Instead of going at the green, let's say it's a tucked left flag, now half of your dispersion is short-sided. To the left, there could be a bunker there. There could be hazards there.
There could be
long grass. It's rough.
Yeah.
I mean, it's basically a 50-50 chance of making a double for an amateur. Whereas if he just had to aim middle of the green and it's a tuck left flag. If he pulls it a bit, if he hits his left side of the dispersion, he's going to be towards the flag. If he hits the right side of his dispersion, he's going to have all the green to work with now and might have a much easier up and down. Well, he will have a much easier up and down.
And to simplify that, it's pretty simple. When you're on the golf course and you see the flag, you get a red flag, an orange flag, and a green flag. So a red flag is a flag you shouldn't go, even as a professional golfer, you shouldn't go for.
The back.
For, let's say it's back left or front left, but there's hazard front. You're not going to go for that flag if you've got short side water. You're going to go for middle of the green.
Yeah.
So for amateur golfers, it's pretty simple. If you can determine what a red, orange, and green flag is. So green flag's middle of the green, you can go for it. Because if you pull it slightly, push it slightly, still you're still probably going to be on the green. Mm. If you can just get those basics right, you'll drop like 4 or 5 shots around, because people just see flag, and even subconsciously, they just want to go for the
100%, because they think
that's the target.
Yeah, and that's a very good point. I'm glad you guys brought that up, because I, you know, obviously play also with a lot with amateurs. That's all they do, is go for the flag. You know, if I just look at their aiming, so forget in their mind perhaps that they've made the decision to go for the flag.
Yeah.
I look at their start. I look at their aim.
Their alignment. And
their alignment is
probably straight at the flag.
You know, and in their mind they might be hoping, okay, I faded a bit to the right, so maybe it ends right of the green, or maybe I pull it a little bit and it ends left of the green.
Yeah.
But if you set your target more towards the center, you'll have a far better chance to get that good bounce.
And it's even 100%. Simple as this. How many amateur golfers, and we talk, it's Kyle's episode, we're talking about amateurs. So how many amateur golfers, let's say flag is back left, and they set up for middle of the green.
Yeah.
Okay, just hear me out. But not subconsciously, they're looking at the flag the whole time. So what is your brain going to do?
Yeah.
It's going to veer towards the flag because you're not looking at your target.
Yeah.
You're looking at where your result should be or you would want it to be.
Yeah.
So your subconscious is so strong, it's going to hoy those hands a little bit to get it subconsciously to the flag because the flag's back left. So changing your target and focusing in on the target is crucial.
100%.
Yeah, but that also comes down, and the guys are normally... You know, and I know, like Kyle says, but he led into how amateurs can apply this mindset that you've got in the last 2 years. It's that to start off with, amateurs aiming isn't very good, you know. And guys are, even egos gets involved. They don't want to do that quick check with the club. You know, when you just put the club in front of your feet? But a lot of amateurs don't want to do that because it's like amateur hour. You know, oh, you're just starting in golf. I have no problem with that. Just a baseline. And I do it about 3 or 4 times in a round.
That's good.
Where I just have a quick baseline. Am I still going right? And I mean, this Sunday, just to give you an idea, a very good player, 12 handicapper, his dispersion and aiming was between 80 and 110 meters out.
He needs a fitting.
No, I'm completely with you. But if you hear me out when I say, you look at where he's supposed to aim, I can clearly see he's aiming. So... In the aiming, it feels like a couple of centimeters. But if you look at where the ball's going to end up, that's 80 to 100 meters dispersion of where you think he's aiming.
Hmm. Now, he needs a golf lesson.
He needs a golf lesson. Fair enough. I'll make sure I tell him.
Just to elaborate to that, I had a customer who was having a lesson on Wednesday. And at Copperleaf, the range wasn't busy, but there were a couple of people on the range. So I was just giving him a little pointers like drills.
Yeah.
You know, to drill in, because he's just all over the place with the swing. And he said to me, I feel like the biggest idiot doing drills in front of people. I'm like, so that's where you come to amateur
that's what
hour.
I mean. But that's what I mean.
I'm like, okay, leave it. Might as well go home then.
Yeah.
Because if you're not going to drill something in, don't drill it with a driver or a 4-iron. Drill it with a 9-iron, a wedge, to get the feeling. If you don't want to do that, then you might as well.
Yeah.
If you don't want to improve, then you might as well just stop the game. That's a bit aggressive.
No, but I hear you. But
continue playing your 24, 18 handicap, whatever.
Yeah, you see, that's the thing. So if you want to be committed towards, you know, see, I maybe it's age, but I just don't have that. I mean, you see the amateurs warm up, and they even get mocked for that. You know, oh, you're warming up.
Yeah, 100%.
I'm just going to rock up to the first and
I almost gave Bryden... yesterday because he was the only guy on the four ball hitting balls on the
Tell
driving
Brad
range.
Me and he can play golf because I'm always the guy warming up and I'm there before the time warming up and it's like, oh, look at me. And then I'm if I mess it up on the first, like, oh, you see, the guy that warms up the most messes it up the most.
I went straight onto the out of the fridge onto the first tee box. But I've got mental demons I still need to deal with. The more I practice, the more my head ticks out and I'm like, now I want to start changing it. So anyway, but I think the last thing that I want to mention, advice to amateurs, is going back to the golf cart. How many amateurs pick a club based on what they think they need to play, get there and they have the wrong club?
Nice.
Push a golf cart, take a caddy, so the caddy can actually be right there by you the whole time. And listen, cart golf is amazing. I love cart golf.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm a big fan.
Yeah, it's lacquer. Because then you can still work in the evening
Correct.
And not sleep.
Correct.
But that's also crucial. I mean, the amount of shots you lose based on having the wrong club based on visually what you think you need versus actually the right club that you need.
But that's
also crucial.
But that's why amateurs, I like to put a bit of pressure on the game. And even if it's for 10 rand, you know, it's irrelevant because that's always amazing. The moment there's something to play for, you go fetch that club. When it's a social round, you know what I mean? And you don't really care about your score, you know, you're going to try and make that club
I don't even want to play golf if you're not even playing for a coach.
Yeah, you've got to play for something.
You've got to play for
100%. There's no point.
Absolutely. There's no point. And ego is already a big one to play for, you know, because that's a big one. Mm. But the 10 rand or the beer or whatever it is afterwards.
Oh,
it's just
tastes way better.
Tastes way better.
You don't have to pay for
way better. But now you're 2 years, you've done these dramatic changes and very consciously you've made these changes.
Yes.
Obviously based on history and learnings that you've done in the game.
Yeah.
But it tells you once again, 2016 you turned pro. I know it was the end of 2016. So it's still a journey to get to that point. So it tells you at 18 when you turned pro, you weren't experienced.
Yeah.
But you felt physically right to do it. You know, and in your mind, maybe at that age, you felt more confident than perhaps you were.
Yeah, also I felt like, you know, if professional golf is what I really want to do with my life, then why not start now?
Yeah.
And work through the ranks. I mean, at that time, the IGT Tour was still very prominent and it was a great, great development tour at the time. And yeah, I mean, played probably 30 events a year on the IGT and Big Easy and... So I thought that was a great time to turn professional and to learn to play, you know, as a pro.
But it's... Did I cut you out there?
No, not at all.
It's also a bit of a nature of the beast at the moment. If you look at young sports people, if you go back 25 years, rugby, cricket, golf, it really didn't matter. They went to university.
Yeah.
Became doctors, lawyers, engineers, whatever their... field of passion was. And then, by the way, we also play sport. But now in the last 15-10 years, especially if you look at Formula One, cricket, tennis, they are turning pro far earlier.
Yeah.
Because I mean, there's even court cases of the kid wanting the parents to give them the permission to turn pro, where the parents are saying no, you still need to do university. I mean, there's physically court cases in sport, tennis, cricket, and golf, all three of them.
But the parents don't want to
turn that yet because maybe they come from a generation of you have to have something as backup. Where the kid's saying, listen, I'm in my peak performance time. And I know it depends on the sport, and golf is a little bit different than, let's say, Formula One or cricket or whatever it might be. But so I think it's not that unusual for somebody at your age and your type of generation to go, I need to turn pro, I'm ready for it.
Yeah.
But now you've done the conscious decision, you've made some changes on your golf game, consciously did so. Now it's all coming together for you.
Yeah, slowly but surely, and I'm hoping I can continue the good form. But I know that if I do the work off the course that I'm supposed to and that I have been doing, I know that I'll have less drop-offs and more...
Consistency,
100%.
So we were just speaking about some details. The bag needs to be in a certain place with a caddy. How would a Casey Jarvis, based on what you've said to us, how does he approach it?
He's just a complete freewheeler. He doesn't... I mean, he's just a joker as well.
Yeah.
I mean, at Limpopo, it was the funniest thing. On the second tee box, he hooked his tee shot straight into the bush. Okay. got there, found his ball, hit it just short of the green, hit it on, made a five or whatever, and walked onto the next tee box, looked at me just before he was about to tee his ball up and gave me a wink, teed his ball up, did his practice swing and looked at the ball, and he looked at his caddy and he was like, "Andres, this is not my ball." And then he was like, "No, I'm just joking." So, I mean, he did that in a tournament. And yeah. For me, that was like just so brilliant. Yeah. You know, that he's actually so calm. And
he's not even worried, okay, I've just hit it left off the tee. What a bad swing. Yeah. Don't care, like,
And I don't mean to bring Casey into your conversation, but it's that every player is different.
Yeah.
You know, your approach that you've had for the last 2 years, maybe in the structure, might not work for a player like Casey. Yeah. Am I right in assuming that, knowing what you know about professional golfers?
Yeah, definitely. 100%.
Everybody's a bit different.
Everyone's different. I mean, but what I've done is I've taken little things from my mates that I know they're very good at. Like Dylan's a very, very structured person. Herman likes to have fun, but he also works hard. And Casey's the mess arounder.
Yeah.
But also works hard, but just has fun in between while he's doing it. And I've
doesn't
almost,
think too much.
He doesn't think too much as well. So what I've done is I've taken little bits and pieces from them and other players around the world and, you know, try to make them my own. You know, so I like to be structured with my processes, but then I like to have fun as well. So I do that at the same time, and it frees me up on the course during tournaments to just go, you know what, if I duff this flop shot, I actually don't even care. And then it just always comes out perfect, you know. So the less you worry about it, the less you care about the result, the more shots you're going to hit that you're actually preparing to hit.
I want to know, while you're at that, when you chipped in at Euphoria to make the cut,
yeah,
what was going through your mind, and did you know that was to make the cut or not?
I knew that was to make the cut, and obviously I was playing with Casey.
Yeah, that was an amazing moment.
Yeah, so we had a little side bet. I don't know if we're allowed to do this while we're playing. Actually, but Casey and I had a side bet.
Why aren't you allowed to? It's friendly.
We're walking down the 17th. There was a par three, and I was two shots behind the cut. And I said, "Casey, I'm going to make this cut, bro. I promise you, I'm going to make this cut." And he was like, "I don't think you're going to make the cut. You're two shots behind. You need to finish birdie." So on 17, I hit it to like 30 foot, just missed the birdie putt, tapped in for par. So now 18 is like the longest par five I've probably ever played. So now I need to make eagle to make the cut, and Casey knows that as well. So he's like, "Guy, if you make this cut, I'll pay you $500. I'm like,
"What a cheap shot."
I'm like, "Deal."
Yeah. I'm joking. I'm
like, "Deal, Casey, it's on, boy. I will make eagle on this hole, and you will pay me R500. So I had driver just short of the slute there, hit another driver off the deck, like probably the hardest swing with a driver, probably 125 mile an hour club head speed off the deck. To about, it was actually 37 meters to the flag. And I walked up there, did a great routine, looked at my caddy, Conrad Lopesha, who's Herman's little brother, and I said, "Boy, I'm making this thing. I will make this." And in it went.
What an incredible moment.
So I basically spoke it into existence, and then...
And it was so cool how Casey went crazy at the same time.
Yeah, and then he paid me the $500. So
okay, good.
It was worth it.
I'm glad he doesn't owe you. And you know, it's you know, I never thought that we're gonna go too much into the amateur, but this is the amateur show, you know, that we have the professionals here to also make it relatable. Because you've just described your four ball, you know, or your players that you are very close to.
Yeah.
Could easily be a typical amateur four ball. Where the one guy's, you know,
Parat.
He's that guy's shoes are polished before he wakes up in the morning. Then the second guy, on his way out to the car, he says, "Oh shit, guys, I need to go back in quickly. I forgot my shoes." And it's still full of the grass from the previous round. You get this in all golf, and it makes it so relatable to what you say now.
Yeah.
And that's why we need to support these guys in viewership over the weekends. Because, yes, they are just like us, but just with a professional title.
Definitely.
But the camera is not going to show all the fun scenes all the time. You know, I know you guys do it in social media and your own posts and stuff. But the camera is always the... your moments. Mm. You know, it's every now and again they brush into a little bit of fun. But this is what's going on when we're watching it, that there's always these fun between the players,
yeah.
You know, and competition, which happens just in a normal amateur golf ball as well.
100%. I mean, I hope the amateurs can relate to us, and that's why the show is so great, because it you know, brings, it shows the professionals, you know, who they are, and people can relate to us, and you know, we're just normal human beings, and
yeah.
We also like to have fun. We work really hard, and we do what we love, but yeah, we're just normal people, and I hope you guys, you know, they can relate to us.
Yes. Now, Carl, you are known on the tour as one of the nicest people ever, and I want to change nice to good people. You know, you're such a good person.
Thank you.
Every interaction you've ever had with mates of mine, it's a forever impression. Where does this come from, that you are just this incredible person that everybody wants to be around?
So it's not as easy as it looks.
It's a lot of hard work.
I put in a lot of hard work to be a good person. I truly believe in life, and this is my motto, is what you put in is what you get out. So the energy I put out into the world is truly, I can say this, the energy that I get back. I meet amazing people all the time. No one's ever horrible to me. You know, just because of the energy that I put out. And that's the life that I've chose to live. And just like in golf, all the hard work I put into my game off the golf course, when I'm on the golf course, I let it just come back to me. The golf gives it back to me because of all the hard work I'm putting in off the course. So I feel like it's a direct correlation between life, being a good person, and getting results on the golf course. Feels like it's brought towards me. It's given to me.
That's a really cool explanation.
Yeah.
And now tell me, where you're still young, you've obviously in the last year won more money than you ever had.
Yeah.
What happens when that money hits your account? Is it, oh, I want to go buy all the stuff I've ever wanted? Or does it go into responsibility, maintenance, make sure you've got reserves? What's the mindset?
I mean, I've got to feed my cats. You know, that's number one.
Number two.
How many cats do you have?
I got two. The one's name's Dale, the other one's Hayes.
That's too much in my opinion.
You're joking.
The one's Dale, the other one's Hayes.
You're joking.
No, I'm joking. No, I love Dale Hayes.
Yeah.
He's a great duck, but
he's also close to you.
Yeah, their names are Griffin and Tiny Man.
Okay, Tiny Man.
You've
Tiny
also got
Man.
A wedding to pay for.
Oh yeah, I got a wedding to pay for. I forgot about that.
Where are you having the wedding?
Clane Carp in Centurion.
Oh, that's awesome. You're doing it locally.
Lovely venue.
So it's a great venue. I've actually been there before. I think it was to an anniversary or something. So now you're getting married. That's in December.
Yeah, 20th of December.
That's the next phase for you and Savannah?
Yeah.
And what does Savannah do?
She's an air hostess.
An air hostess?
Yeah.
Just like, so your guys' travel is quite all over the place.
Yeah, we don't see each other much, but when we do, it's a great time.
Okay.
But she worked for Qatar Airlines for 3 years.
Okay.
And then COVID hit and they had to let go of 60% of their staff and whatever. Yeah. And then she got lucky enough, a couple months after they let her go, she got a contract with Airlink. Local flight company, very good. Now recently she resigned from Airlink and she's got a new job now with a private chartering company that's based out of London.
Nice, the tips are going to be great on those ones.
Yeah, so she's going to have a great time for the next couple of years.
So she's going to base herself in London now?
No, she's allowed to stay here. But when they do the chartering, they fly her over there and then they go from there.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It is. That private charter world is a completely it's irrelevant. It's what
private
you get
charter
paid.
And private yachts is just.
It's irrelevant what you get paid per hour or day. It's irrelevant. The tips is what you're after.
Yeah.
You know, when a guy's spending R1 million for a flight, you know, to throw $10,000 in there for him is just. Like small change.
It's ridiculous.
I've seen those tips fly.
My brother-in-law is an engineer on a yacht. And they had Mariah Carey on the show.
No, on the show
on the boat. And when he told me his tip, I was like,
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're joking. Yeah, yeah. I was like, per person. Or sharing the pot, per person.
So I might need to ask Savannah for a sponsorship. You know?
Yeah, yeah. I was just going to say, and hopefully she...
NetJets.
She might just fly for one of the PGA boys anytime soon. Maybe. You can take that money and put that onto the course. That will be wonderful.
Jeez, that'll be great.
So listen, I want to ask you a question out of this. It's quite topical at the moment, but... why are you not – so the Sunshine Tour, have you got any plans for PJ, the LIV merger? Is there any other plans for you outside of the Sunshine Tour, or are you happy with where we are?
I'm definitely not going to settle where I am at the moment. I've got some big plans.
Okay.
Leaving next week Thursday to play British Open qualifier.
Okay.
That could be life-changing if you really think about it.
Life-changing.
I'm playing well at the moment. I've never played links golf, so really looking forward to that.
Okay. Well, have you played Fancourt links?
Yeah, I have.
Okay, it's very. I mean,
With your ball flight, you're going to be golden.
You're going to be golden, buddy.
Yeah, and your dynamic loft.
I'll make sure that dynamic loft. is very strong.
Yeah. Well, Shane, we really wish you well with that, man.
Thank you. Yeah. So hoping to do well. Tee off on the 4th of July for the pre-qualifier. 36 holes in one day, and then. Hopefully make it through and then play well at the British Open. It'll be a dream come true.
I can just imagine. Because that's what everybody wants.
And then, obviously that's a short-term goal at the moment. But my long-term goals are more after the win and everything. I'm into all the co-sanctional events for the next 2 years.
Yeah.
Challenge Tour and DP World Tour with the Sunshine Tour. So... that's a huge opportunity for me. It's my first time being into all those events. So I can really now work on my game and try and peak at the right time to play well in those events and try venture on to another tour. Yeah.
Just like Carl, that's really exciting because having that exemption on the tours just gives you that freedom. Stability. Yeah, that 100%. Freedom.
And I mean, opportunity that Sunshine Tour players have.
Yeah.
Just unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, I worked it out. The next 2 years, I'm getting into 20 co-sanctioned events with Challenge Tour and DP.
Yeah.
So that's basically 20 chances to get onto another tour within the next 2 years.
Yeah.
And that's huge for me. If I can just continue doing the work that I have been doing, I know that I'll peak at the right time.
So you play, the golf side is obviously a big part of it, but it seems to us from the outside perspective that you are also quite involved in growing the tour awareness from a player's perspective. They involved you in quite a few stuff in the social media, take over the social media. What is the deal there?
So I'm a yes guy.
Okay.
Anyone asks me to do something, I'll do it.
Okay.
Except for drugs.
Kids, stay off that shit.
Stay off that, please.
Yeah.
Okay. Any bit of exposure for myself, my brand is a very, it's a big thing.
Yeah.
Even if it's a little...
20-second video.
20-second video. Or a little teaching lesson with some of the youngsters that come through on a practice round, on the range. That little things like that really do go a long way. And the more people see your face, the more they hear your name, the better for you. So, I'll do anything.
Oh, well, that's good. And I want to say you do it very authentically and very relatably. And Dylan Naidu also does it exceptionally well.
He's a great guy.
Smart and intelligent, eh?
So he was the guy that actually got me into the whole decade strategy system.
Oh, is it? I can imagine it.
That's all him.
That makes sense. That makes... you sat here before.
I watched his podcast with you guys, and he said that I owe him a few percent
of
my prize money teaching me the...
Can you cough up so we can send it to them?
I'll give it to him in love. I'll pay him back with love.
So, Carl, I think today's been so interesting. And this is long format, but we can go on for 2 hours with these players.
You know what I don't understand with Albert? Okay, in the beginning when we started this, we did research and preparation, even with Mike de Jong. Yeah. I'll never forget this. Trying to do research on Mike de Jong, and we rock up and everyone's sitting there and having lunch, and I rock up and I'm running a little late and whatnot, and I say, Albert, I'm not even paying attention to the background, and people like, Albert, I can't find information about Albert de Mike de Jong. And he's sitting there, right, having lunch. He said, I'm here.
In the meeting.
And every bloody time he does preparation, and he doesn't even talk about five things on your preparation. You need to learn and adapt.
But you know what? In roundabout ways.
Quick fire.
Yeah, in roundabout ways, we are getting to the stuff.
No, I'm just teasing
but we,
you.
But it is a matter for us. And also, that's why when we ask for feedback on the show, that you guys have to engage with us. Because, yes, we're sitting here and we've explained a little bit as to why we do this. But this is genuinely your show. Give us where we make mistakes. I mean, we've had critical feedback. And it's, of course, like any human, it gets you a little bit for a second. But then we adapt and we get better. So we want the engagement to happen. And Kyle, thank you that you are also an incredible supporter of us and the show and for everything that you do for golf. But I want to just quickly mention your sponsors. Because there's obviously massive people behind you.
Yes.
Big people. But just take us through your sponsorship. What does it look like at the moment and your support team?
Well, equipment-wise, obviously Titleist.
Yes.
They've hopped on board and given me a great opportunity for the next year to prove myself for the brand.
Okay.
Amazing master fitters, Rudy Mertz and, Leonard Loxton and Stuart, some great, great guys, part of the team. And to be part of that is just amazing in itself. It gives me confidence to become a better player and to prove everyone that, I do deserve to have one of the full line spots.
Yeah.
And then, clothing wise, Handy, Vietnamese brand actually, very, very good quality clothing.
Very good. I mean, from a physical perspective, and it looks clean.
Thank you very much. No, I must say the quality is fantastic.
They don't have any more joggers.
These pants, these pants feel like, like I'm naked almost. Yeah. That's how light they are. But they hopped on board a few weeks ago, and I'm glad to be representing their brand. Yeah.
And that's it, Nay.
That's it.
Okay, great. You've mentioned your coaches, and thank you for what you do for golf, Kyle. And like I said to you, I feel like I'm shortchanging the listeners by cutting it off here. But we also understand everybody's time, and normally an hour and 10 minutes is what our viewers enjoy watching.
Yeah.
But thank you so much for today. And thank you for taking the time to come here. And good luck with the rest of today, and especially with the plans for this year.
Thank you.
And we will specifically check in with you on the British qualifier.
Yes, please.
When is that exact date?
4th of July.
4th of July, 36
4th holes. Of July. That's a famous number
in America.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying, everybody knows the 4th of July.
No, but really, thank you guys for letting me be part of the show. And, I hope that this gives someone else that's watching a different perspective on golf and life. If it's a youngster, elderly person, if I can just change one person's perspective, that I've done my job. So thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Oh, what a pleasure. And I will say to you, Kyle, it's like, I'll quote one of my mates, when you being such a nice guy, he's like, he's good looking. He's a professional athlete that does very well, and now he's a nice guy. That just shouldn't happen. You know what I mean? One of them, he should be a doer. You know what I mean? Okay, he's a really good golfer, guys, but he's such a d**k, and we all feel better. We're like, oh, thank God.
Well, you play against me for money on the course. I'll show you my
I'll show you my
Literally.
I cannot do this podcast, Monet. You need to especially know. I cannot let this podcast go without telling the story, which I know you might have heard already. But when one of my mates, and he does a job, a day, 9 to 5. Nothing.
Toffee.
He's got nothing to do with sport. He sat here and he needed to go and do work, like actual work, a 9 to 5 work. Carl says to him, should I help you with your work today? And he genuinely meant it. That's like, imagine just sitting in a Corbin Bosch in the cricket thing.
Do you want me to bowl to you today?
Exactly. And Corbin's like, I'm just going to go train, guys. And here's the guy. And he's like, you want me to bowl for you?
Yeah.
No, that's going to really interrupt my day.
That's the ADHD coming up. That's a whole nother story for the next episode.
But that that's the guy that you are. And what's amazing is that you've shown you can have great success by being a simple, humble, wonderful person. And that's a lesson that anybody can learn
in
any walks of life. Arthur, I can tell you, I can feel you slept today. I think this was more words out of Arthur today than all the podcasts combined.
Well done, my boy.
So congratulations.
Well, I'm also interrupting and I'm not taking a anymore exactly. Because now I just need to step it up a bit.
Yeah, what boo-hoo.
boo-hoo.
So thanks for today, and Arthur, as always, and also for all the fittings that you do for all of these players, you know. I don't think people always realize this useless thing next to me actually has a very useful attribute in his life.
Now, Arthur's a brilliant club fitter. I mean, I went for a fitting with you last year sometime. Yeah,
it was last year.
It was end of last year. I think it was the same
end of last year, and you opened my eyes to a whole other world with which shafts I should actually be using in my irons and lofts with woods and all sorts of stuff. So Arthur definitely opened my eyes to that, and that's what's in my bag today, actually. Yeah. So thank you, Arthur.
That's what I'm there for, guys.
And thank you to your parents for the roles that they also play.
Yes.
You know, in your role, in your house. And then lastly, to Savannah.
Yes.
Good luck with this HTHD guy for the rest of your life.
Yes.
It's going to be full of surprises. And I just want to finish there where I know what you said earlier. I really meant what you said when you said it's not always easy. Because sometimes we have to smile and wave.
100%.
And I get that. And I really honor that ability with you. But I want you to know, now that we've sat down with you and everybody that's listening, be who you are. And it's okay to have moments where you perhaps not as excitable on that particular moment. No one here is judging you, and I can promise you now, this show and everybody that's watching it, we're massive fans of you, Carl.
Thank you.
You said earlier that Casey, as a younger man, inspires you.
Yes.
You inspire me and Arthur.
Oh, thank you. Know,
and I mean, we have a 15-year age gap between us, and I'll speak for myself, Arthur, before you say it. So thank you very much, and what an honor to sit here with you today. Arthur, I also appreciate it, and thank you very much for yours.
No, today was fun.
Thank you.
Great, thanks, Carlos.
Awesome.